Good morning. Most of you will remember when I last preached on the commandment. You see the blank look. I mean, no idea. Did you? Which one was it? I last preached on the second commandment way back in January. When I preached, I gave a quote from J. John's book, God's Top Ten. And it was about some people's apparent belief in the irrelevance of the second commandment in the way that we currently live our lives. And to start this morning, I want to quote from his chapter on this tenth commandment. And what he writes is, the command God gave 3,500 years ago is hugely relevant for us today. Our society, our world, our lives would be so transformed if we didn't covet. So this is a potentially transformational commandment. Never work with kids and Tim Williams. At least we didn't have Dave the blow-up dog, did we? There we go. So to expand what Tim was saying earlier, the commandment actually reads, you shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife or his male or female servant, his ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. And as Tim said, covet is not a word that we use very much in everyday conversations. It means to desire something that belongs to another, or more colloquially, it's saying, I want something that you have. And one really interesting aspect of this commandment is that it actually deals with attitudes and feelings rather than actions. If you reflect on the commandments that we've been looking at over the past few weeks, you shall not give false testimony, you shall not steal, you shall not commit adultery. Those commandments, at least on the surface, are concerned with actions. Whereas this commandment, you shall not covet, is about our desires, our feelings, which are hidden from others, only truly known by ourselves and, of course, by God. So this commandment is essentially about managing our feelings towards things that are not ours. So let's throw in a couple of idioms, a couple of relevant, well-known sayings which highlight how we can easily be drawn into covetous behavior. So firstly, keeping up with the Joneses, which means that people need to show that they are as good as others by getting what they have and doing what they do. And then the grass is always greener on the other side, which means that the things that a person does not have always seem more appealing than the things that they do have. And these two phrases, and indeed the tenth commandment, are actually based on dissatisfaction. Covetous behavior is about dissatisfaction. So I want to look at the things that are actually set out in this commandment. And while the commandment may be viewed in a very literal sense, it's perhaps important to interpret its components in a way that is more relevant, I believe, to our lives today. So, do not covet your neighbour's house. Now, I'm sure that many of you have been to other people's houses and thought how nice they were. Perhaps how much nicer than your house they were. Or you've walked or driven through towns or neighbourhoods and thought how lovely the houses were, how lovely the neighbourhood was. And who hasn't stopped by an estate agent's window when walking through a town, perhaps on holiday, and gazed in at the houses that are there for sale? And it's not just our neighbours' houses, is it? This part of the commandment also encompasses other possessions, cars, equipment, gadgets, and so on. Now, I don't think there's anything wrong with admiring other people's houses or possessions. There's nothing wrong with appreciating nice things that other people have, provided that it doesn't extend into coveting, into a strong desire for those things because of our own dissatisfaction. Do not covet your neighbor's wife. And I think it's reasonable to extend this part of the commandment to include our neighbor's husband, partner, boyfriend, girlfriend. Now, perhaps that coveting might arise from the good looks of these people, or from their lovely nature and character, or from their kindness and generosity. Again, I don't think there's anything wrong from seeing someone and acknowledging how pretty, handsome, kind, talented they are. That seems to me to fall well short of covetous behaviour, of desiring those people for ourselves and seeking to break up existing relationships. Do not covet your neighbour's servants. Now, nowadays, we might think of servants as being people who make the lives of others easier. Cleaners, gardeners, window cleaners, and so on. And I suppose we might also extend this to things that make people's lives easier, rather than restricting ourselves to just people. I'm thinking about gadgets here. You know, for example, those little robot machines that hoover your house and mow your lawn while you sit down and have a cuppa or whatever other technology there is. And I do appreciate, however, there are many of us, perhaps of a certain age or certain outlook, who might not ever covet any of these modern gadgets, but who would instead tut knowingly and wonder what the world is coming to. And do not covet your neighbour's ox or donkey. Now, we've talked about how easy some elements of the Ten Commandments are to follow. Most of you might think, cracked it. That's the one I'm going to focus on, oxes and donkeys. Now, in context, in Moses' time, an ox or donkey would be important to a person's livelihood. And so we should essentially here be thinking about how we view jobs that other people have and how they earn a living. And again, I don't think there's anything wrong with wanting good things to happen in our lives, to have jobs that we enjoy and provide enough income for us. It's the inappropriate desire for what others have that creates the problem. And then finally, we have the catch-all at the end of the commandment. Now, I'm sure many of you will have seen or perhaps even been subject to the final point on a well-drafted job description. The job description that goes into great detail about what the job holder will be required to do before the final point, which says something like anything else that you might be required to do from time to time. I think we've covered everything, but just in case, let's throw in an anything. And so it is with this commandment. In addition to everything else set out, do not covet anything else that belongs to your neighbour. I'm sure you've all got things you could think of with regards to that. At a very basic level, it might be when you're sat in a restaurant and you're looking enviously at the dessert that they ordered, thinking, why did I go for the apple pie again? And can you actually steal theirs? So hopefully you get the idea of where the boundaries of this commandment lie, where that line is that we should not cross. Appreciate or admire things that others have by all means. But God's command is straightforward. Do not desire for ourselves anything else that people have. And why should we obey the commandment? Firstly, I think obeying this commandment enhances our relationship with God. In preparing for this talk this morning, I read somewhere the words, thanksgiving and contentment are proper heart attitudes that contrast with covetousness. Thanksgiving and contentment are proper heart attitudes that contrast with covetousness. The reality, the truth is, that people who are close to God are contented and grateful. The words of 1 John, do not love the world or anything in the world. If anyone loves the world, love for the Father is not in them. Covetous behavior comes from a lack of satisfaction with the gifts and the blessings that God has bestowed upon us. Covetous behavior is essentially saying, that's not fair. It's essentially saying to God, you are not being fair. And of course, such thinking can only drive a wedge between God and ourselves. It's not our place to judge how God acts or what he thinks. Our role is to trust, no matter how difficult at times in the fact that God will give us what we need and when we need it, not what we think we need or what we might want. If we truly believe that, if we fully trust and find true satisfaction in God's blessings and provision, we will find true contentment. And I believe that true contentment is life-changing. In Ephesians 5, for of this you can be sure, no immoral, impure or greedy or covetous person has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. Secondly, I think that obeying this command helps us to obey God's other commandments. Why do I say that? Well, consider the motives that often underline other wrongdoing. Why do people steal? Why do people lie? Why do people commit adultery? And even why do people kill? Why do some conflicts, arguments, even wars arise? In James 4 it says, what causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires and battle within you? You desire but you do not have, so you kill. You covet but you cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and fight. If people were actually satisfied with what they have, if they were content, then perhaps they would more easily fulfill God's other commandments. And thirdly, obeying this command is good for us, is good for our well-being. Here's a thought. Christians should be the most contented people in the world. Your covetousness is the opposite of contentment. Covetousness is focusing on what we don't have rather than what we do have. Being contented is about being satisfied that we have everything that we need. Being grateful for the blessings that we have. In Hebrews 13, it says, keep your lives free from the love of money and be content with what you have. Because God has said, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. How much regard do we really give to those words? How do we live our lives? Do we live our lives with thankfulness or with longing for more? How much time do we spend wanting more, wanting what others have, so that we miss the blessings of what's right here in our lives, like our families and friends? The risk is that we get caught up in always wanting more, bigger, faster. So many people find it impossible to be content with what they have, with what they are, which leads to the paradox, the more we get, the more we want. So many people live for a dream that can never be achieved, or for dreams that, when they are achieved, people don't feel how they thought they'd feel. There's a bit of a letdown. But anyway, off they go and they chase another dream, only to be let down again and again. All of that leads to disappointment and frustration, feeling upset or feeling annoyed. How damaging are those emotions to ourselves, particularly when compared with being satisfied, grateful, and contented? And while we're caught up in the more, bigger, faster mentality, there's a lack of permanence as well, where things might satisfy for us for a while, but then we want something else. It's like children, isn't it, playing with a new toy. Then get bored, discard it, look for something else. I'm not sure we adults are much better, actually. How can covetous behaviour possibly be good for anybody, Christian or non-Christian? How can the negative emotional responses associated with covetous behaviour, with dissatisfaction, be better than contentment? In 1 Timothy 6 it says, but godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. Those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. And my fourth and final reason why we should obey this command is because it will impact our relationship with our neighbours, our family, friends, work colleagues, people we meet. Think again about the Joneses. If we want to keep up with the Joneses, we are essentially setting ourselves up to be in relentless competition with them. A competition for which there is no winner, no pleasure, no satisfaction. As Jesus himself tells us, love your neighbour as yourself. But how can you if you always desire what your neighbour has? How can you truly love your neighbour if you want them to have less than you? Or if you would secretly, or perhaps not so secretly, rejoice when mishaps happen. When they bump their shiny new car or their hot tub springs a leak. A loving spirit allows us to be glad when our neighbour is glad, to celebrate when our neighbour celebrates, to enjoy with our neighbour all that is good in their life. No envy, no jealousy, no desire for what they've got that we haven't. Instead, a loving spirit that brings contentment to us and a renewed strength to all our relationships. So what? In all good sermons, and even in the not so good sermons, there should always be a so what. So what does all of that mean for us in the way that we live our lives? So what is or should be the outworking of this commandment? Let me repeat the second sentence from that J. John quote. Our society, our world, our lives would be so transformed if we didn't cover. And that challenge to transform our lives and society and the world begins with us, begins with Christians, begins with all believers. And so just a few brief specific thoughts for you to reflect on, not in any order of importance, I should add. Spend some time reflecting on what contentment means for you, and then try to live your life in such a way that contentment is the most likely outcome. Be thankful and satisfied with what you have. Be grateful for the blessings that God has bestowed on you. Be happy for others. Take delight in the blessings that others have been given for the good things going on in their lives. Focus on relationships, not things. As one writer put it, we never covet what belongs to those we love. Work harder to really trust God, to trust that God has and will provide all that we need. And finally, keep your eyes firmly fixed on God and the rewards that await in heaven. In Colossians 3 verse 2 it says, set your minds on things above, not on earthly things. And then in Matthew 6 verses 19 to 21, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And so to conclude, as we complete this series on the boundaries and blessings of the Ten Commandments, the continuing theme that keeps being referred to is love. In fact, we might have actually called the series something like It's All About Love, actually. Just somebody's nicked that title. Reflect on those words in Romans 13. The commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet, and whatever other command there may be, are summed up in this one command: love your neighbor as yourself. If we truly love God, if we truly love each other, then the natural consequence is that we obey all of God's commandments, particularly the ones we've been looking at in this series. And so my prayer for us all this morning is that the words of Luke 10:27 guide and direct our lives. He answered, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." If we all did that, I truly believe that our society, our world, our lives would indeed be transformed.